Let's start part two of the Keturah story, and we'll move now into the world of Drash. The world of Drash is an entirely different perspective on the text. Meaning the world of Drash looks to try and draw out of the text what really needs to be pulled out from the inner, if you like, meanings. Drash, literally Drash, means to inquire, to go deeper into something. And therefore what Chazal are doing when they're reading Drash is they're trying to find themes in the text that are not there in the Pshat, but they want to bring out to see, because at the end of the day, what is the purpose of Torah anyway? What is the purpose of the narrative of the Chumash? That's the first question of Rashi on the Chumash. Why do I even need to have a narrative in the Chumash? And really the Chumash, Torah, means Hora'ah. It means instruction, it means halakha. And Rashi's first question, of course, is the Torah could have started with the first mitzvah. And the answer he gives, of course, is you need other things. And he talks about Israel, but there are many answers. But the Torah is there to teach us many important themes in terms of ethics, morality, the background context, the hashkafa, what we today call hashkafa, in which to fit the halachic framework. Meaning, you cannot have halacha in a vacuum. Otherwise you become very focused on the letter of the law, and you lose sight of the spirit of the law. And that's why there is a constant switch between narrative law, narrative law, narrative law. And from the narrative, Chazal want to bring out, the rabbis want to bring out Drash ideas. The truth is, even the Gemara itself is structured in this way. The Gemara is structured in such a way that it's not just page after page of halakha, but you have halakha and then a page of agadata, a page of midrashim, a page of halakha, a page of midrashim, because again, Chazal wants us to keep this balance between spirit and law, and hashkafa and halakha, which is critical. So let's look at Drash now, and look at Keturah from a Drash perspective. Chazal bring out here in number 21 the following. Ben kuf mem shana haya Avram Avinu kishenata et Keturah. Avram was 140 years old when he married Keturah. My Keturah, who is Keturah? Rebbe Omer, we saw him right at the beginning, Zot Hagar. And now we're going to go with that line. This is Hagar. The in time, and if you want to ask, Ben Chazal here, my but Yosef, what does he mean that Avram was Moisif? He added on a wife. It's ke'inyan, it's the same kind of use of the word lahoitev as we see in Isaiah, but Yosef Hashem ledaba elai, odd, God spoke to me again, but it's the same God, it's the same me, it's just round two. So the same thing with Hagar, it's the same Avram, it's the same Hagar, it's just round two. So my Keturah, so why all of a sudden she's called Keturah? She kitra atzma b'mitzvot u'b'masim tovim. Because she, Keturah means to, like, sweet smelling. She adorned herself, it's like she scented herself with mitzvot and good deeds, as opposed to Hagar, maybe. Hagar is not known as being the great tzaddikus. Keturah, apparently now, Hagar has done shuvah. Davar acher, an alternative reading, Keturah is targum ksura. Keturah in Aramaic, and this is also something which Drash does. It takes words and it reads them even in different languages to bring out those messages. Keturah means tied. In what way was she tied up? She'afal pisha kotov baba telech vateita. Even though it says with Hagar in her first incarnation that she wandered off, which Chazal understand, and Rashi that brings to mean that she wandered off back to her life as an Egyptian, you know, idolater. Presumably that involved a new life, a new family, etc. Nevertheless, loy nechshada al biri acheret chutz me'avram. She never connected with any other person apart from Abraham. El chatuma kekankan shu kashur b'chatum. She was called Keturah because she tied herself up, if you like, sexually. She would not allow herself to be with any other person. She said, I am reserved for Avram, and when he wants me back, that's the only one I'm going back to. Nobody else can be with me in the meantime. That's what it means, Keturah. Oh, you can't go back to Avram the second time if she's been married to somebody else in the meantime.
No, and also if she gets a guest.
That's not true. It's a mitzvah to remarry your wife if you had to get with your wife. A kohen is not allowed to remarry his wife if she's divorced because she's a grusha. But actually, if a man and a wife divorce and they decide they made the wrong decision, they can absolutely get married, and it's in the mitzvah maaseh grushato. The only condition is she mustn't be married to anyone else in the meantime. And if you like Chazal, coming from exactly the point you're making, that if Avram is going to remarry the same woman, it must be that she wasn't married to anyone else in the middle. Ah, you're going to tell me, but why must it be? Because this was before Matan Torah. Why would Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov even need to keep the halacha of maaseh grushato in that way? And then you open up the entire parsha of did or did not the Avot keep the Torah before the Torah was given, and what does that mean, and what kind of Torah could that mean, which is an entire different share, which I'm not getting into now. I made a reference to it on the bottom in the footnote, but that's a good point. Yes?
Midrash said that she had five sons before marrying Avram.
No, she had five sons where? In Keturah? No, it seems those five sons are from Avram. These are sons from Avram, the sons of Keturah that she bore with Avram. Yes, absolutely. It seems to be from this, at least, that although we'll see there is a hint to that maybe she had children from completely different marriage before she even met Avram, but it seems that he took her back. Now, of course, this is only if she's Hagar. Nachon. This is only if she's Hagar. But now, if you think about this, this changes the entire dynamic. And this, most of the sources in the rabbis of the Mishnah, the Gemara, and Chazal, go down this route that she was indeed Hagar. In fact, if you look, for example, at the Targum Yonatan, which appears in the Mikras Kedolos, and of course is a very ancient papyrus on the Torah, number 22, but Isif Avram Anasav Iter. Avram again married another wife, Ushma Keturah, her name is Keturah, he Hagar. He just puts it straight in. He Hagar, she is Hagar. The Keturah lay min shiruah. So Rashi brings the same idea, number 23, Keturah Zohagar. The Nikre Keturah al Shem Sher Naim Maaseh Keturah. She's sweet smelling, her deeds are sweet like the Keturah. Because she kishra pitcha, and she tied herself up, if you like. Shalom nizavgala Adam miyom shepirsha miyavram. She didn't go with anybody else. She didn't marry anybody else. Even the name, the way in which the name is introduced, Ushma Keturah. Chazal number, the source number 24, picks up there the idea that Sadiqim Shman Kodem Lahem. The Sadiqim, when they're introduced in the Torah, their name comes first. The word and his name or her name appears first. Ushmo Mordechai, Ushmo Elkanah, Ushmi Hashem. So too it says, Ushma Keturah. She is like, in that sense, a tzaddikah. Now, what does this say about the dynamic with Avram? Avram is married to Sarah. Sarah introduces him to this shifcha called Hagar. She marries Hagar. This causes enormous family problems. Sarah demands that Hagar is expelled, that Ishmael is expelled. That's exactly what Avram does, because in this sense he's told by God, listen to what your wife says and get rid of Hagar and get rid of Ishmael. And as soon as Sarah dies, the first thing that we see happening as soon as Sarah dies, pretty much, is Hagar's back. Gone, if you like, but not forgotten. And this is very interesting, because Avram never wanted to send Hagar away. He was made to do that by Sarah, and it seems almost obvious in this sense that when Sarah is gone, then Hagar will come back. And this idea of the Baal Tshuva, the comeback kid, the idea that you may have wandered off, but there's always another option to come back in, is really modeled. Chazal see Hagar and indeed Ishmael as a model in the Torah for the Baal Tshuva. The people can go off and people can have their negative experiences, but there's always a route back. Look in the Kli Yaakov for a second. Yes, of course.
I can't hear this. Sarah was actually so much against Hagar than thinking of Ishmael.
Well, she demanded, when Hagar was pregnant the first time, she afflicted Hagar. She was mean to her and she threw her out, and that was the first time Hagar ran away. The second time it was because of Ishmael, but So the both of them were not favored individuals in Sarah's eyes. Anyway, look at number 25. Akein ba'al taretz v'lomah she'asat tshuva. She did tshuva. Kmo Yishmael bena she'asa gam kein tshuva. He also did tshuva. Ukedei leparsem zeh. But in order to publicize this, Kara Avram Shema Keturah. Avram renamed her Keturah. Al Shem HaKetoret. He pirsam lechol. He wanted to let everybody know she'asa tshuva. That even though she was bad at the beginning, she's back because she did tshuva. So kol bal tshuva na simla has donot kizchiyot. And the story of about tshuva is all the negative things they do, once they do tshuva, become merits. That energy, that negative energy that is produced by whatever they did wrong, now can be used as a means to return. The hazadonot olim l'reach nichoach, and all those terrible things that they may have done in the past now become a sweet smelling flavor. Kamad chuyot, just like the merit. Al kain him shilat ketoret. That's why she's like the ketoret. Shehachelbana shirechora ole l'reach hanichoach. What is the chelbana? The chelbana is the spice in the ketoret which absolutely smells foul. It smells absolutely terrible, like, I don't know, rotten eggs or something. But unless you have the chelbana in the ketoret is not valid. And therefore the chelbana is the classic, if you like, a symbol of the you know, they say that sibur, the congregation, the community is called sibur, because sibur, tzadi bet, vav rei, stands for tzadikim, benonim, verushaim. You can't have a sibur without all the different types of people there, not just the tzadikim, the community of tzadikim. So you need the bari tshuva, if you like, chelbana. It needs to come back into it. That crowd of people needs to be there as well.
There seems to be stretching credibility.
No, because it's drash. It's not coming out of the text. That's why I gave my introduction. Drash doesn't stretch credibility because that's not what the text says. This is the idea that Chazal wants to bring out from the text because it's a true idea. It's an idea about the concept of tshuva. They're not saying.
Does she have something to?
Correct. That whenever you look at drash, when drash takes words and, you know, totafot means in African two and that, you have to understand what drash is trying to do. Drash is not trying to tell you that this is what happened. Maybe even pshat is not trying to tell you that this is what happened, but that's a bigger story.
What we're trying to do here is to impose its own ideas of morality and ethics on what's written in the
Torah. It hasn't imposed its own ideas. It's trying to see that in the Torah itself, there are the roots and the seeds of those ideas. Now you can decide which way which comes first, the chicken or the egg. But no, but we see in the Torah the concept of the Baal Shiva. We see people who have gone off and come back in all sorts of situations, whether it's Reuven or all sorts of Yehuda who goes off and leaves the family and then he comes back to the family. The concept of a Baal Shiva is not something that Chazal invented, but what they want to do is they want to project that not just onto the heroes, Yehuda and Reuven, and Noah, they became Balei Tshuva, but onto the people who are the not so obvious heroes, the Hagaras and the Ishmaels, in the sense, and they're making an almost a messianic point with the idea that these people eventually will do Tshuva again. This idea that the Bnei Ishmael, who may be a source of trouble for the Jewish people, are ultimately potentially a source of salvation for the Jewish people. Which is very interesting, because if you speak to the more messianic religious Zionist types in Israel, who are coming very much out of Rav Kook, Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook and Rav Avraham Kook, notwithstanding the military day-to-day issues that Israel has with Arabs in the, they don't see that as an existential, as an eschatological, if you like, issue. They see that the real problem, if you like, is with Edom, is with Christianity rather than with Islam and with Ishmael, because built in is this idea that Ishmael is the. I'll give you an interesting story. This is a story that was said to me by Rabbi Shlomo Ritzkin. I hope I'm not letting anything out of the bag by telling this story. Rabbi Ritzkin, who set up Ifrat in Gush Etzion many years ago, he was asked by Rabbi Tzvi Yehuda Kook back in the 1970s to bring Ifrat into the Gush Emunim movement, which was the sort of more messianic settlement wing. And Rav Ritzkin refused. He said, I'm not interested in being part of that big political picture. I just want to create the issue of Eretz Israel. And, you know, I don't want to be part of it. So he said, no, you must join us. So Rav Ritzkin said to him, well, I don't know about the movement. What's going to be with all of the millions and millions of Arabs living in Yehuda v'Shomron? How does your worldview take that into account? I don't really see how that works. So he said, Rabbi, you see Yehuda grasping by the hand and looked in his eyes and said to him, Heini yitzyahadu. They will convert to Judaism. Heini yitzyahadu. He said, I'm not bothered. I'm not worried about that. That's just a technical logistic issue, that's all. In the grand scheme of things, Yishmael is the comeback kid. Yishmael does tshuva. And this, therefore, influences the way that people see the world around them. It's very interesting. You would think that it wasn't that way, but it really is in many ways that way. And therefore, this concept of the Baal tshuva comes out in that way. There are some problems that this is not just an idea which is imposed on the text, it needs to fit with the text. So what are then the Pilag Shim? Remember it said the B'nai HaPilag Shim? Now on a Pshat level, the B'nai HaPilag Shim is the sons of Hagar and Keturah, and the Ramban explained why they're called Pilag Shim. But if Hagar is Keturah, who are the Pilag Shim, plural? So look at Rashi number 26. Rashi the Pilag Shim says, Chaser Ketiv. Pilag Shim is written without the Yud. Shelo Haita Ela Pilagesh Achat. But there really was only one Pelegesh, Ki Hagar, Ki Keturah. So Rashi wants to say that the reason that the word Pilag Shim is written without the Yud in the Torah is to indicate that because we're saying that Hagar is Keturah, there weren't actually two Pilag Shim, there was only one Pelegesh. Which is interesting, and it kind of works, or it would work, if the word Pilag Shim was written with one Yud. But actually, in our Chumash, the word Pilag Shim is written with two yods. In fact, this is the only place in the Chumash that Pilag Shim is written with two yods. And therefore, what is Rashi saying? This opens up a whole other box, which I'm not getting into now, which is, what do we do when the Mephoshim seem to have a slightly different version of the text than the one that we have? I actually noticed that the Art Scroll Chumash, not known for being, left-wing, if you like, publication, just very clearly says on this verse that Rashi is working off a different text of the Chumash that we have today. Which, first of all, I don't think is true, because Rashi is not making this up. Rashi is quoting Chazal, and therefore I think our scholars are wrong when they say Rashi would have had a different text. It could be Rashi had our text, but Rashi is quoting Chazal, who maybe have had a slightly different text, and therefore the question is, how does that work? I'm not getting into that now. How do we know the text of the Chumash is correct? What does correct mean? What level of correct is correct? I'm not getting into that now, but it's thrown up here, as in a few other places. You know, there's quite a famous Rashi that talks about Tzitzit, the gematria of Tzitzit, and connects it to the mitzvot. So there are 613 mitzvot, and Tzitzit is gematria 600, and if you add 5 for the knot and 6 and 8 for the strings, you get 613. The problem is that Tzitzit is not spelt with the second yud in the Chumash, so the gematria doesn't work. There are a number of situations like this. That's not for now. Rav Kook, we were talking about Rav Kook. Let's quote Rav Kook. Rav Kook talks about Keturah, and he talks about how central Keturah is to our, if you like, worldview and Hashkafah. Look what he says here, 27. Elisha Hagar Lukha B'Chavod Shal Mitzur. Now, that Hagar was taken, rather, was married with a proper Nisuin, as a proper wife originally, Ali Dei Bakashata Shal Sarah, when Sarah asked him to marry her. It says there with Hagar, he married her as a wife. Later on, when Abram tells her to Sarah that she can then do with Hagar whatever she wants, she is downgraded. Hagar was downgraded. Rav Kook's understanding is that Hagar started as a full wife and was then downgraded to a pilegesh. But when she ran away the first time, she wasn't trying to leave Avram. She was just trying to get away from Sarah. She wasn't trying to run away from Avram. He never sent her away. She wasn't trying to get away from him, and he wasn't trying to get away from her. So they were still married. The Badai Chikta She'od Yavor HaKa'as V'Tashuv Elav. She wanted to at some point get back to Avram Avinu. Aval HaKach Al Yidei Ma'aseh Yishmael. But because of the story of Yishmael, Halo Amra Sarah Garesh Ha'amahazot. At that point, Sarah turns around to Avraham and says, no, this woman has to go completely. She has to be thrown out completely. The Hashem Yitzbarach Amarlon, God says to him, Kol Asher Tomar Alecha Sarah Shema B'Kola, now you have to listen to Sarah. The Katuv Yishalcheha, Vishlecheha, and he threw her out. Shema Shema Kmo Gerushin. At that point, he divorces her. Shenifudu Zemizeh Al Yidei Pirud. Zeh Haya Ba'Avram Legabi Hagar Rak Az Tosheshalcha Al Yidei Masi Yishmael. That was only then because of Yishmael. But now he wants to take her back because he wants to bring her back into the family. Again, this idea that Hagar started off as a wife, went down to a Pilegesh, then was thrown out completely and she was a Grusha, and now once Sarah is gone, she's going to be brought back as a full wife. But there's another angle to this as well, which is Yitzchak. What role does Yitzchak have in all of this? We don't know in the Chumash what Yitzchak thinks when Ishmael and Hagar are thrown out. What was Yitzchak's relationship with Hagar?
Well, I thought he was a baby, and that
it was the circumcision that Ishmael was mocking him, and Sarah saw it, and he was angry. It wasn't a circumcision, it was later, it was after the circumcision. We don't know how long later after the circumcision.
Well, I thought that Abraham made a celebration.
Yes, it was a celebration, correct. But that may not have been the circumcision. That may have been the weaning of Yitzchak or later on. We don't know how old Yitzchak was when Ishmael and Hagar was, even on a text level, it's not clear. He may have had some kind of relationship with Hagar, and Chazal actually see this a little bit in the text itself. After the Akedah, now, which is another great question, what was Yitzchak's reaction to the Akedah when his father took him up and said to him, you're going to be brought into an offering? When Abraham comes back from the Akedah, he comes back alone. He doesn't come back with Yitzchak. That's in the text. Where was Yitzchak? Why doesn't he come back with Avram? So if you look in number 28, Chazal say, "Vayashav Yitzchak in Be'er L'Chayroi." Yitzchak was. We see him next living in this place, Be'er L'Chayroi. This place is named Be'er L'Chayroi by whom? By Hagar. This is the name of the well where the Malach appeared first to Hagar when she first ran away. It's called Be'er L'Chayroi. The Chazal say, Yashav in Hagar. After the Akedah, Yitzchak went to live with Hagar, his stepmother. Almanat Aviv, the widow, if you like, or of his father, although she's not a widow, she's Avram still alive. Sha'amra, she's the one that said, Be'er L'Chayroi L'Chayolamim. And in fact, it's Yitzchak that brings Hagar back later once his mother dies. Again, this is not clear. When does Sarah die? It doesn't say that in the text. It has the story of the Akedah. Then it has the story of Rivka's birth. And then later, the next part, at the beginning of Parshas Chayei Sarah, Sarah dies. Now, you know and I know, because you just mentioned it, that the Seder Olam Rabbah and Chazal's take was that these things happen at the same time. The Akedah and Rivka's birth and Sarah's death are all happening at the same time. But that's not how all the Mechoshim see it, and that's not how it has to read. If you read it that way, it turns out that Rivka was three when you brought her to marry Yitzchak, which has its own problems on a shat level, how Yitzchak, and Yitzchak was 37 at the Akedah. All of these things come out from that. But it could be that Sarah died years and years and years after, according to some of the Mephoshim, this is the case, after the Akedah. In which case, where was Abraham, where was Yitzchak all of this time? Living potentially with Hagar. Living with Hagar.
Isn't there a reference to when Sarah dies, Yitzchak and Ishmael are very...
When Abraham died. And that happens a long time later. When Sarah dies, nobody's there. Ishmael's not there, and Yitzchak's not even there. Which is interesting. That's another good question which I never thought of. Where is Yitzchak at the burial of his own mother? Very interesting question. Number 29. Yitzchak bombed Bela Chayroi. He says here, Leheichen Halach, where did he go? Bela Chayroi. Halach Lahafiyat Hagar. He went to bring Hagar from the well, and see my affliction. Meaning, he went to bring her back to his father. It could be, saying that there's this beautiful symmetry that's going on, that Avram is looking for a marriage, a partner for his son Yitzchak, and Yitzchak at the same time is looking for a partner for his father Abraham. And who is that partner? That partner is Hagar, who he knows is the love of his father's life to some degree. Obviously Sarah is his partner in life, the one with whom he created everything he created. But Hagar is somebody that Avram, we've seen all these sources that suggest that Avram was very closely connected to. And therefore, Avram is brought back into connection with Hagar through the means of his son Yitzchak. Let's just talk about a few other things before we finish. Let's get a little bit into a more mystical bent and pick up on this idea of the four wives of the patriarch. Because, as I say, on a drash level, Chazal wants to bring out from Hagar and Keturah a beautiful story, this idea of the Baal Teshuva and how the Baal Teshuva can always come back. And by the way, there's another pshat problem with Hagar being Keturah, which is, if Hagar is Keturah, then I brought it in the footnote here. Yishmael was 13 when Yitzchak was born, okay? And Yitzchak is now 40, the text says that. So Yishmael is now at least 53, and Hagar has to be in her 70s, and now 60s, 70s, and now she marries Avram and has 6 more children. Which is interesting as a question, where is all that coming from? But then you can look in the footnotes more on that. What is this idea of the four wives? So if you look here in number 31, so the Zohar says an interesting thing. Tachazi, come and listen, he says. The forefathers all were in the same secret. They all knew the same secret. Every single one of the forefathers had four wives. They all have to have four wives, which will be news to some of us. Abraham, Ba'arba. Abraham had four wives. Who were the four wives of Abraham according to Zohar? Sarah, the Hagar, and it takes for granted Hagar and Keturah are the same person. The Trey Pilakshim, and the two Pilakshim, who now, according to Zohar, are two completely different people. He had Sarah, Keturah stroke Hagar, and the two Pilakshim. Dikstiv, Ulibnei Pilakshim, Ashel Avram. Pilegis, Trey, two Pilakshim, Ha'ar, and that's two. Yitzchak had four wives. Now, who was Yitzchak's wife? Rivka. Any other suggestions?
Leah.
No, that was his daughter-in-law. Are there any other candidates for Yitzchak's wife? Not at all. You won't find any hint. We don't know very much about... by the way, what does Yitzchak say to Rivka in terms of the relationship and what we see of them, Yitzchak and Rivka? How many words does Yitzchak say to Rivka in the Torah? How much would he say to her? Nothing. Yitzchak never says one word to Rivka in the story in the Chumash. Rivka says one line to him, which is, if Yaakov marries a non-Jewish girl, I'm going to die. That's all she says to him, and he says nothing to her. Now, obviously, in real life, they communicate with each other on different things. Presumably, there were discussions about where they were going to put their tents, and where they were going to do this, where they were going to do that. But it's interesting, the Chumash, whereas Avram and Sarah, Yaakov and Rachel and Leah, there are any number, certainly Yaakov and Rachel, of marital conversations, maybe even arguments at some level between them. Yitzchak and Rivka are a mystery. Yitzchak is a mystery individual in many ways, before and after the Akedah. We know almost nothing about him. And here, it says about him, Yitzchak Goraza de Arba, this is Zatira de Rivka, because there are four, Arba Zatira de Rivka, there are four sides to Rivka. Because it says, Vayikach is Rivka Chad, one of them is he married Rivka, Vatahil Ali Isha, she became his wife, that's a second wife for her. And she's a wife on four levels. The Yahweh, and he loved her. Plus, that's the kind of third emanation. The Nachem Yitzchak Achreimon, he was comforted for his mother, Ha'arba. In a sense, on a mystical level, I don't know what this means. You go and ask somebody who is a Kabbalist. You Rivka, if you like, served in four different emanations as a wife to Yitzchak. And obviously, Yaakov is easy, because Yaakov actually had four obvious physical wives: Rachel, Leah, Bilhah, and Zilpah. But this idea that there were four wives of Avraham, I brought you because on this level, the two Pelagshim were indeed two extra wives that he had. And there is another Kabbalistic line, just before we finish with more of a halachic discussion, which I think is very interesting. The more Kabbalistic sources here, I brought you the Sheni Shmuel, wants to bring this idea out, that the reason that Avraham Avinu has a child through Hagar and then has children through Keturah is, maybe if it's the same person, doesn't matter if it is or it isn't, here let's say it is the same person, is because there is negativity inside Avraham that he has to, if you like, get rid of. And first of all, there's a negativity that he gets rid of through Ishmael, so that Yitzchak can be born. Yitzchak can't be born before that is kind of flushed out. Then there is more negativity still, but that's a more refined negativity that has to come out through the B'nai Keturah, and all of this is trying to refine, if you like, the line of Avraham, and therefore the B'nai Keturah represents something which is bad, but not as bad as Ishmael. And that's maybe one of the reasons why there's this whole idea in 34, which is V'natan Avraham Matanot, that Avraham gives them gifts. So Pirshu Rabbi Seinuch, that Rashi doesn't want to go down the Pshat route to say that they are monetary gifts. So the rabbis explained, Shem Tuma Masar Lahem. He's quoting a Gemara again here. He gave them the Shem Tuma. What's a Shem Tuma? Right. The if you like, a way of connecting with God, rather than through pure means, through impure means. Through Tumah rather than Tara. What does that mean? What does that mean here? And Rashi brings this quite well known. What does he mean he gave them the Shem Tumah? That it might mean that he gave them a way of connecting spiritually, which is not prohibited, it's not a good desire, it's not idolatrous, but it is, if you like, a route that the Jews are not allowed to take. Maybe it's more in terms of, as we see in the Eastern religions, and this is one of the reasons why people want to make connections, and maybe the connections are a little bit spurious, they're certainly not on the Pshat level, between Avraham sending out his children to the East, maybe even to the Far East, and this idea of Far Eastern religions. Some people want to talk about the Brahmins being related to Avraham. I'm not telling you that this is historically accurate. I'm just telling you that people want to make that. Interesting that in Hindu thought, Brahma's consort is called Sarasvati, okay, which is interesting as well. And I brought you, if you want to know more about that, I brought you a source from the Zohar, and also an audio share by Rav Yaakov Weinberg. Rav Yaakov Weinberg was a Rosh Hashiva of Nezra, Baltimore, a few decades ago. He's passed away some time ago. He has a share that I found online about this idea of Abraham being the source of Eastern religion, being like a Shem Tumah, meaning a source of spirituality, which is legitimate, but it's not legitimate for the Jewish people, but maybe for the non-Jewish people in that sense. The Jews have got a lot of attractions towards Eastern religions. They seem to be somehow to gravitate towards that in some ways, and there are those that want to read this into the whole discussion. There's the whole discussion in the later on in Tanakh of the Chachmei Kedem, the wise people of the East. The East have wisdom. It brings to Shlomo. It's interesting. Who was the Queen of Sheba? The Queen of Sheba comes from Shiva, which is one of these B'nai Keturah that is sent away. So her, maybe you could read a whole new story into her rapprochement with King Solomon, with Shlomo HaMelech, is part of this like family reunion, like 10, 15 generations down, coming back in again as well. There is one other person I want to speak about before we finish, which is one other famous Bat Keturah, which makes a brief appearance on the scene, who is Tzipporah. Tzipporah, of course, is the daughter of Yitro, and Yitro is from Midian. Midian is one of the B'nai Keturah. And therefore, when Moshe marries Tzipporah, he's marrying, if you like, a long-lost Midianite relation. Now, one of the things that Tzipporah does, fascinatingly, is Brit Mila on Moshe's son. There's this famous episode at the end of Parsha Shmot when Moshe is on the way back from the burning bush to Egypt to fulfill God's mission, and he stops in at a hotel overnight. It's called a Malon, okay? And God tries to kill him in the middle of the night. This is not in the Midrash, this is in the text, and nobody quite knows why God's trying to kill him, having just sent him on a mission to save the Jewish people. And Tzipporah basically saves him, and she does that by performing a Brit Milah on their son. A very strange passage in the Torah, exactly what that means and where that's coming from. So the Rambam, on a halachic level, in number 35, makes an interesting comment. In number 35, Amru Chachamim, the rabbis explain to the Rambam, Shebnei Keturah, that the children of Keturah, Shehein Zar'o Shel Avram, Sheba'acha Yishmael, these are Avram's children after Yishmael was born, the Yitzchak and Yitzchak was born, Chayavim B'milah. They are halachically obligated in Brit Milah. V'hoyel nit'arvu hayom B'nei Yishmael u'B'nei Keturah. And since today the Yishmaelites and the B'nei Keturah are all mixed in, as we saw in the source before from, see if you remember whether that source, that the Yishmael and no cheating, it was in the Jubilees, it was the book of Yoblim, okay? Yitchayvu akol b'milah b'shmini. The Rambam says halachically, the B'nei Yishmael were born from Yishmael, and Yishmael came before the mitzvah of Brit Milah. Yitzchak was born into the mitzvah of Brit Milah, and the B'nai Keturah were also born into the mitzvah of Brit Milah. So it says, halachically, if you know you are from the family of Keturah, you have an obligation to do Brit Milah on the eighth day, just like the Jews do. They're not Jewish, but they have an obligation of Milah on the eighth day, just like it says to Avraham Avinu. Yishmael do not have an obligation of Milah on the eighth day because they were born from a family that came before the whole mitzvah of Milah was even given. But since we don't know today, and he's quoting this halachically, since we don't know today who are the B'nai Yishmael and who are the B'nai Keturah, so all of them have an obligation halachically of Milah on the eighth day. Which is interesting, because Muslims do not perform Brit Milah, as far as I'm aware, on the eighth day. But it may be halachically, as far as we're concerned, maybe they should do, even though they're non-Jews. If you look here in number 36, on Yoredei, and these are real hardline halachic sources in Pitchei Tshuva on Yoredei, it says Aval Oivik Kachavim, Ein Bashar HaMelech, Shekhasa Vashitas Ledata Rambam, according to the Rambam's view, B'nei Keturah Af Bizman Hazeh Chayavim B'milah. Okay? B'nei Keturah are obligated in Milah, Ksheirim Heim Lamul, and therefore they are part of the mitzvah of Milah, and they can act as Moelim. They can act as Moelim. Anyone who is subject to Brit Milah is able to perform Brit Milah. Anyone who is not, is not. Very interesting, if you were to walk in at a Brit Milah to say, our moel is a B'nai Keturah, Ben Keturah, we've managed to find out who that is, I don't think you'd get very far today with that. But he's saying theoretically, because we don't pass him like the Rambam on a halachic basis, but according to the Rambam, if you manage to isolate someone from the family of Keturah and say, here's our moel for today, then, you know, Matalu Manayim, he is in the midst of Milah and he's able to carry out a Brit Milah. And that is the Tzitzel Yezer, who is Rabbi Yehuda Waldenberg, a recent Pesach, who died just a few years ago. That is why Moshe Rabbeinu's wife is able to perform a Brit Milah on their son. Because it's very strange, all of a sudden, a woman performs a Milah, which, I don't know, maybe a woman can perform a Milah, that's a whole different discussion, but it's never been seen before in Chumash, and everyone seems to be quite happy with that, and a non-Jewish woman. Or if she is non-Jewish, I mean, if she marries Moshe Rabbeinu, which gets back to the whole question of who was Jewish and who wasn't Jewish before Matan Torah, which is not for now. Look at this last source together when we're finished. Madua huskara tzipora b'pasha shemot. Why is tzipora suddenly in on this Tasha performing the Brit Milah on the sun? Also, women are not obligated to perform milah. Okay, to mal their sons. The obligation is on the father, not the mother. The kosev li yashev the mikan raya l'shitas haRambam. From this piece of Chumash, you can show from the proof for the view of the Rambam, which he gives in Perek Yumim Malachim, the spira lei the b'nei Keturah chayav in the milah. He wants to say that the children of Keturah are obligated in milah. Umidyan hu mibnei Keturah. Midyan is one of the children of Keturah. The tzipora shehaita midyanit, and tzipora was a midyanit, haita chayevet b'milah. She was obligated in milah. The b'nei Noach lo matzino hachiluk ben ha'ish la ha'isha. In when it comes to non-Jews performing milah, where do we see a difference in Jews being men and women? Why should there be a difference? Umpizeh gam aleha chal hachiyuv kamo leMoshe. Therefore, she had just as strong an obligation to give her son a Brit Milah as Moshe did, but A, she was a Midianite, and B, she was a woman who made no difference. But gam he bechlal ha'onesh, and therefore she was included in the punishment, if you like, that they didn't give their son a milah. The ikur shaldava zeh sheb b'nei Keturah gam ha'isha chayavit lamor. Now, again, it's whether you want to learn Chumash with a halachic eye. There are some that, when I showed this to my son, he got all upset and he said, I don't think you should learn Chumash through the lens of modern day halacha. That's not how to learn Chumash. I said, that's an interesting perspective. There are different opinions on how to learn Chumash. And there are people who want to use modern day halacha as a lens to look back through into Chumash and explain things. And actually, that's an interesting question. There are things that happen in the Tanakh that don't seem to match with the modern halachic process, and you could give a whole series of shirim on problematic issues and how they fit with halacha, and maybe that isn't the way we want to learn Chumash, but certainly this, if you're looking at Midianites, they don't come in very often. There is one other place, by the way, where the Midian and Madan, who is another son of Terah, do come into the story. They play like a side role. Do you remember who that was? That's true. That's later on.
Yeah.
That's later on. That's Moab. That's Moab, not Midian. That's Moab. No. In the Chumash itself, the Midianites and the Madianites are instrumental in one important thing. They sell Joseph to Egypt. Like, I have no idea how that connects in with anything we've said today. Okay? But since we're focusing just for a few minutes on Midianites and Madianites, then I'm sure there is a link somewhere in how Yosef is related to that as well, but that's another sort of side role that they play. So just to summarize, because I want to end here, what have we seen? Keturah, I think, has a very important pshat role to play, because if we are to understand the role of Avraham Avinu, the role of Bereishis, the role of the Brit Ben Avraham and the Brit Milah, etc., which plays itself into modern Israeli politics in some ways, as to the land of Israel and the borders of the land of Israel and the role of the land of Israel, Keturah is a very important player in that, in the sense that her sons are also children of Avraham that have to fill this land. So I think that's very clearly the focus of Keturah. Chazal choose to see Keturah and Hagar as the same person, and therefore to use the Keturah model as the model of the Baal Teshuva, and they're obviously coming off the name. The name Keturah is an unusual name, and therefore they're coming from that too. And therefore we learn this beautiful idea of Tshuva now, Tshuva later, Yishmael, our relationship with the Arab world as well, which also feeds into the modern day political narrative, depending on how Tanakhi you are in your understanding of modern geopolitics. And then finally, I think there's this more mystical angle of the wives of Avraham and the purpose of the wives of Avraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov in, to like, cleansing in some way the Jewish people to be able to be the Jewish people that they're meant to become, and the people that were able to stand on Matan Torah. So, from a beginning point where we said, what do we know about Keturah? And the answer is klum, not very much. Hopefully we know a little bit more about Keturah now. I'm quite sure there's much more to know about Keturah, but we don't have any time now, and therefore we'll leave it there. And next time you read the text about Keturah, you'll have a lot of material to say at the Shabbos table that people perhaps didn't expect. So thank you for coming. I'm sorry it's been very hot, but nevertheless, we've managed. Please God, there'll be more. I'm not giving this slot again in this series, but I'll be giving three more Wednesday shiurim this week, next week, and then 2 weeks after that on various different issues which are advertised outside.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful day. Barak Hashem.